Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rob.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanik.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah.
It's Rob and Souk. What is going on? I had a great weekend.
Yeah, I got no complaints.
Sort of.
Rained a little bit on Memorial Day, which kind of stunk, but other than that...
Well, Saturday was delightful.
A great little weekend.
A damned delight.
Cooked some...
Or was that Sunday?
I smoked some ribs.
What day was it, like, 75 and mostly sunny?
That was Sunday.
Sunday.
You paid for the whole seat, but you only needed the edge.
I thought it was supposed to be a really nice 4 days, but it was kind of off and on.
Well, we've talked about this before. The weathermen know nothing right now.
No.
And
they're doing it from home, and quite frankly, I'm not happy about it.
Right. And they're not getting help from as many pilots up in the airways, you know, because they get a lot of their weather from that. I'm starting to think this whole Doppler 9000 crap,
it's all just a ruse. Just made up.
There's no Doppler.
No. Although we're supposed to... We're supposed to get like a great stretch here, although the thunderstorms are supposed to be back this weekend. But I guess they're saying like mid-80s by the end of the week.
3 days in the 80s
here.
Yeah,
we're supposed to get beautiful weather. Yeah,
how about that, guys?
Even on the rainy day, it was still kind of warm and muggy. The Monday, Memorial Day, it was quite warm outside for kind of being yucky and overcast.
All right. Poll question today in the fan personality series. Which fan personality is most like you? You can vote on this poll question at 1080thefan.com. Hey, we have a new leader.
What do we got?
Dusty.
The man of the people.
Toe the dump.
So a lot of people have coke habits? Is that what we're learning?
I don't think we needed to go there, did we?
Well, I went there. I don't know if we needed to go there. I was just saying.
Right.
And by the way, why does that have anything to do with Dusty? I just could have been asking the question, do a lot of people have coke problems? And by the way... For you kids out there, when you grow up, one of the things that you will realize that you're like, oh my God, I'm an adult,
is
how many people do blow. I had no idea. I just thought that was something you saw in movies. And then
speaking of cocaine and staying up all the time.
Yeah, and then you're an adult and you're just like hanging out and all of a sudden like your boss is doing railers. You're like, whoa, like what's happening here? That was a shock to my system.
Coming in second right now, again, open poll question until tomorrow in the fan personality series. Mike Lynch, 22%.
Again, a man of the people.
Of the vote. The people love him. And then you and I are next at 19%. It's a dead heat.
Sticking right there in the middle. Meaty part of the bell curve.
All right. Coming up here, the Seahawks get a new running back. What Larry Scott said about the return of Pac-12 football. And you pointed out to me during the break. I'm still trying to go through them, but I'm looking at these. The potential salary cut numbers.
Yeah, Jeff Passan actually had the numbers that were proposed today by the Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball to the players.
And, yeah, basically, if you fall into a salary cat, you know, just salary slot, they're cutting it by X percent. They're all different, and we can get to those.
And by the way, in a stunning development, the players are pissed off.
Yeah, they don't like it.
Well, for the ones making a lot of money, it is a significant cut.
And then in the club tonight, man, the Karens are really something right now.
Boy.
The Karens are...
Yeah, we've got Central
Park. Taking the world by
storm. We've got Central Park Karen, who...
Yes, well, we'll talk about her.
There's been some retribution.
We also have mask-wearing Karen, which I saw on your Twitter feed over the weekend. The woman who wore a mask for 45 minutes and started crying.
Couldn't handle it.
So we'll get to that, complete with audio in the club, right now, the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh. Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
It's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the fan by Frostbrewed Coors Light.
Crotch waffle.
Go Beavers. How about that?
Number five. Number five.
Well, former Coug and NFL quarterback Ryan Leaf is back in it.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know if he's on drugs or anything, but he was arrested in Palm Desert on misdemeanor domestic battery charges.
Yeah.
We really know nothing about the details of this.
No, he has had a really, really tough time with substance abuse. And like you said, we don't know if this is related to that, but it's not good to see him back in the police headlines.
And he was released on $5,000 bail. Years of drug abuse, 2 years prison time, but he had reestablished himself. He's a broadcaster on ESPN, did some work with Pac-12 Network as well.
He had done some coaching and was helping others that as like a drug counselor, and it seemed like he had finally gotten his life straight, and unfortunately then this.
Troy Franklin is the nation's number two wide receiver recruit, and he pared down to his final four today. They are Arizona State, Alabama, Washington, and Oregon.
I did see that a lot of people believe that Oregon is the front runner for this young man.
And apparently he's really good.
Yeah.
Pass catcher. Over the long weekend, the Seahawks got some help at running back, signing free agent Carlos Hyde, most recently with the Texans. He had one of his better years of his career in Houston last year, and he was 29 years old. He rushed for over 1,000 yards, had 6 touchdowns. Now, he is coming off labrum surgery. The Seahawks maintain, even after signing Hyde, Chris Carson, if healthy, is their primary running back.
Well, look, we all know that this is a much better signing than where we were going down the road, a week or two ago, of the Marshawn Lynch kicking the tires on that. Carlos Hyde can still play in this league.
Devontae Freeman was another one.
That was another one that was...
But nobody wants him.
No, I don't know what
he must just be out of gas.
It might be. And this is the thing with running backs. And they even said this about, like, if you watch Todd Gurley, he's just not the same player. Like, there's just the wear and tear on some of these guys in the NFL. You can go from star to knowing wanting you real, real quick. But that's his own coach, by the way, down in Atlanta that said that about Todd Gurley.
Major League Baseball has sent players a new economic proposal. This one would not include a 50-50 revenue split. Rather, players would defer salary to future years to help clubs operate this year. And it's a sliding scale, so the players making the most money would give up the most, and the lowest earners would get most of their money.
So basically, like, if you're making $500,000, you're making $430,000. But if you're making $35 million a year, that's going to get cut down to about $7.8 million. So the Garrett Coles of the world and the Mike Trouts go from making $30 million a year down to under $8 million. And I know $8 million is still a lot, but that's a hefty pay cut for those guys to swallow.
And Jeff Passan tweeted what they would have been paid if they just prorated the salary for the season. And it's insane the difference once you get higher in
salaries. Yeah, so basically the top guys are taking – everyone's taking a 50% pay cut. That's what they agreed to with the 82 games. But the top guys are now taking a 30% cut off of the 50% that they already took. So, I mean, for some of these guys, you're talking about an 80% salary reduction, and I just think that's going to be a hard pill to swallow.
The NHL announces the regular season is over, and when they restart, they will go straight to a 24-team playoff that is 78% of the league. They target early June for a move into phase two of their rebirth. Rules of that would include a maximum of only 6 players on the ice for workouts at a time.
Yeah. So, you know, this is going to be the model, I think, that the NBA is something along these lines. You don't want to play meaningless games. but you also need to make it fair for the, you know, the 9-10 teams to make their way in. So this makes sense. Now, when we actually see this back, realistically, if everything goes smoothly, maybe August 1st, I think you could realistically see the NHL back. Does another team, another league make it before that? I just think that we're this, all this talk of mid-June and July, I think realistically, this is more likely August for any of these sports to come back.
Come too far together. Stop now. Let's do it.
That's it, baby. Shot it from the rooftops.
America's number one fighting force.
Number one.
And number one is your boy Damian Lillard making headlines today. In the sports world, he tells Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports that he will not play if the NBA returns and his team doesn't have a shot at the playoffs. So he says if they just pick up meaningless games just to finish the regular season, he will not participate. He'll be with the team in practice, but he doesn't want to play. His premise is that, hey, they'll be getting two starters back. Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins should be ready to go, and they won't be the only players rusty. The whole league's going to be rusty, and he's saying, hey, this is an opportunity for us. So he also thinks the situation is conducive to sneaking up and knocking some teams off that aren't either staying in shape or don't care as much as before, or guys who just don't want to come back and play may be ripe to be picked off. And he's saying he'd prefer that they get into a play into the playoffs type tournament. So he was kind of using his voice as leverage to push the NBA in that direction because it would benefit the Blazers.
Sure, and it doesn't do any good. We know that guys coming back are going to be more susceptible to injury. Golden State, Steve Kerr said a couple weeks ago that his season is over. They don't have any desire to roll anyone back out and play meaningless games, which is why the NHL model makes sense, right? The NHL did this. They're saying, hey, the top four teams, you're done. Go sit down. And everyone else, you're going to have to play, and we're giving those teams, so they're giving the four teams that wouldn't make the playoffs in each conference, they're giving them a crack at this with some five-game series, playing some round-robin games. And this to me makes total sense because this is where the Blazers would fall into that range. You eliminate the crappy teams like Golden State that have no reason to play anymore, and you give the ones that do, the Pelicans and the Blazers, you give them a legitimate shot. That's how you get this thing back rolling.
All right. Blazers, by the way, if you're wondering, you'd forgotten. They are 27-39, 3.5 games back of the current 8 seed, which is Memphis. The Hot 5 at 5, refreshed by Coors Light. Go to at Coors Light on Twitter and tell them who could use a 6-pack, and Coors Light will buy them one. Coors Light! Mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Let's get to those MLB numbers and then what Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott said today. That is a bit of a shift from some previous statements. That coming up next on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
So yesterday was the first Memorial Day without Major League Baseball in the United States since 1880.
Yikes.
It's a long time ago.
Wow. We had Korean baseball.
Yes.
Which I still haven't watched any of.
We did. No one cares. Well, maybe in Korea they care.
Sure.
But that's still going on. They have any positives? Any shutdowns down there?
I don't think so. Over not there? That I've heard. I mean, every now and then, like, I'll be on ESPN or whatever, and you see, like, something scroll across the bottom of it. So, as far as I know, it's still rolling on. Right.
Well, that was 140 years ago, Bill. 1880.
Seems like a long time.
And, yeah, that was back when they called it Decoration Day because they would decorate, like, the graves of...
Really?
Yeah, they called it Decoration Day.
Did they bitch and moan about the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day?
I don't know.
Because that's the big rager on social media.
Oh, yeah.
You had to yell about, you know, it's not Veterans Day, it's Memorial Day.
Right, and then there is a difference.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, but that was, like, 140 years ago. That's when old Hoss Radbourne pitched. That was his first year.
Yeah.
Old Hoss Radbourne.
I got a Bowman baseball card with him on it, I think. Yeah, good times.
Great Twitter feed, old Hoss Radbourne. And baseball in those times, yeah, you had guys like Buttercup Dickerson. And
we really need to go back to the days where someone could be called Buttercup, and it'd be great.
Tricky Nichols was out there. It was great. But that was a long time ago. That was the last time the U.S. had a Memorial Day without baseball, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand, right? I mean, baseball in America, the pastime, it works. But not right now, and not if the owners and the players can't come to some sort of financial agreement.
So here are, so Jeff Passan had this. By the way, he just tweeted his latest tweet. Just tossed this out.
Yeah.
The A's are telling their minor league players that they will not pay them at the end of the month.
Yikes.
And they only get like $400 a week.
Yeah, so if you don't know, like the ones that are really screwed in this whole thing are minor league teams. They're talking about you could have a mass exodus of minor league teams that just shut down, that just they don't. Without fans, they can't operate, plain and simple. I mean, those margins are so thin, and the minor league players...
Well, they also weren't planning on bringing the minor leagues back at all.
Exactly.
It was just going to be no minor league.
Yeah, so it's they're in a world of hurt, and all those players...
Well, that doesn't make any sense. If you can have fans, why not let them make some money?
But you can't have fans.
Well, right, you don't know that. I mean, maybe in 2 months you can.
Yeah, it's possible. But again, just the idea... of minor league, like a Major League Baseball and whatever they're going through pales in comparison to what the minor leagues are doing and the players. Those minor league players, unless the ones that got big signing bonuses, those guys make peanuts. I mean, there's been lawsuits that because of how little they make. They make less than minimum wage. So that really is the budgetary crisis. And the A's, by the way, a couple weeks back were the first major league team. They defaulted on their stadium payment. They pay about $1 million. It was like $1 million and change in rent per month. They failed to make the payment, told the Oakland Coliseum that they're not going to make the payment, and now they're telling their minor league players, yeah, you ain't getting any money from us.
Not a good sign.
No.
Says Jeff Passan. Minor league sports are quite doomed.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. No one really talks about it because unfortunately, you know, I don't want to say we don't care enough, but
yeah.
That's kind of the way it is. We're just talking about the big boys and the minor leagues. Nobody's thinking about them, but holy crap.
They're gutted.
Absolutely gutted.
And
so,
who knows what that looks like because
right.
when this thing eventually comes back next year.
They're going to need them.
They're going to need them. And what the hell happens when those teams are gone?
I think they're going to have to supplement them.
Yeah, there's going to have to be some sort of Major League Baseball bailout, right?
You would think. So here's Passan on the potential salary cuts. So Major League Baseball is no longer... saying to players that we want a 50-50 rev split.
Yeah, we knew that was a non-starter. They viewed it as a salary cap, and so they're punting on that.
They've come back to the table with potential salary cuts, and it goes by how much money you make. So basically, here's an interesting question. What percentage of all players make $1 million or less, do you think, in baseball?
Well, I'm cheating because I saw this.
Oh, you already saw
it. I saw that Passan tweeted this.
So, 65% of all players make $1 million or less.
Yes. So,
which I think is, I don't know how many fans would know that.
Well, remember the young guys, even the guys that are high price guys, first, second, third round picks, they make big signing bonuses, but they don't make any money. Baseball has done a phenomenal job of keeping young guys underneath free market costs. I mean, you make nothing for your first 4 to 5 years in baseball minus your signing bonus.
So minimum salary this year is $564K. Those players would earn $262K. If you earned $1 million this year, it would be dropped to $434,000. And you can go all the way up. The highest range is anybody earning $35 million or more will make $7.84 million.
Which is a huge slash. But we know what baseball is trying to do here is... You don't need to get everyone in baseball on board. You just need to get enough of the players. You need 51% to go along with this. And remember, the NFL did this in their collective bargaining agreement. If you remember, the collective bargaining agreement that the NFL passed wasn't really good for a lot of the star players, which is why you heard Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and these guys speak out against it. But what the NFL was smart to do is say, fine, we're not dealing with Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. We're going after the rank and file. We're going to try to take care of those guys. And if we get enough of them on board, the other guys just have to take the pill and swallow it. And that's what Major League Baseball is doing here. They're saying, look, 65% of the guys make $1 million or less. Hey, if you make less than $1 million, you're basically going to be making your prorated salary, the 50% off the 82 games. And their goal is that they're going to get enough of those guys to say yes and force the Garrett Coles and the Mike Trouts to say, hey, I'm sorry, this is the way it is, and you're going to come back. Now, Garrett Cole or Mike Trout, I suppose you can say I'm not going to play, but then you're in breach of contract and you're going to look horrid. So Major League Baseball clearly knows what they're doing here, and they are going to put the young guys and the also Rans in a direct war against the high earners.
What do the players want? Like, what
they want?
Where's this headed?
They want the prorated salaries that they agreed to back in March.
Okay,
that's what they want.
So they're not going to get that.
No.
So that's their extreme. And then the owner's extreme was salary cap.
Yep.
And which they're not going to get. They've already come off of that.
Yeah, they're not going to tie it to revenue. The one that I thought made sense was just the deferred payments. Major League Baseball saying, fine, you know, you can have your money, but it's not going to be right now. We need to wait for another year. So you're going to defer that over a couple seasons to try to make that up. But now you see this with the proposed cuts, and you know, we're kind of back at, I don't know if this is going to be a starter for the Major League Baseball Union, but if you get enough guys that are in need, you get enough guys that aren't millionaires, that may be enough to get this pushed through.
It's just crazy. I mean, I know it's a ton of money, but you see the cut that they're making some of the top paid players take, and you're like, wow, they're really trying to get away with 80% of their salary, even though they're going to play 50% of their season.
Yep.
And I get it, and I get that it's stupid that they would complain about it because you're like, oh, well, you still make $8 million a year. But if you think about the percentage that they're losing, imagine your own job losing 80% of your salary, even though you're still working more than that.
And this is why Major League Baseball is smart. They are going to pit the last guy on the roster making $600,000 a year, who's probably only been making $600,000 for a year or two and that needs his salary. They're going to pit him against Gerrit Cole. And they're really going to say, you selfish bastard, you have a chance to make $7.8 million this year for playing 82 games and you don't want to do it. That's what this is. And more often than not, the owners win more often than not in these sorts of negotiations because they have the leverage. And more often than not, the general public sides with owners over players. And now you're going to not only have the public pressure, but you're going to have what I call the rank and file, the low earners of Major League Baseball saying, look, I need to play. I need my salary.
There will be that pressure, but there's probably also going to be pressure the other way from the higher earner guys to say, hey, sit tight. We can get you more.
Yeah.
You know, because this is not acceptable. And the players union has already come out and said, they're not going to go for this.
No.
So the owner's going to have to come back and take the next step down. I guess your point is how long do you sit and wait?
Yep.
You know, I mean, how long can you sit and wait when guys need money?
I could see this dragging out for a while.
Well, look at hockey, right? So hockey has an agreement to come back and play, right? The players and the owners, they agreed upon it. This is good. Right. We finally got that.
It's a little different because their season was already almost played.
Exactly. But still, right here we are on May 26th, and they have some sort of agreement. They can't even begin training camp until July 1, which means their season can't even go until August 1st, basically, because everyone says you need at least 3 to 4 weeks of ramp up time. And that's right now with an agreement. You've got Major League Baseball that every day that goes on, your season gets cut more and more and more and more. And you can't even come to the table with any sort of agreement right now. So this idea that even if you come up with an agreement here, realistically, let's say 2 to 3 weeks out, that magically the season just starts up. Remember, you're at least a month out from when you come up with an agreement before you can even start to think about logistically bringing everyone back, starting to hold spring trainings, work out the logistics of where everyone's going to play. I mean, these are so much more complex in getting guys back on the field other than just this idea of, well, states are going to allow it. Even coming to an agreement, it takes a long time to do. And baseball doesn't have an agreement. The NBA doesn't have an agreement. And even the NFL, which is trying to paint the rosy picture of, hey, we're fine. Everything is going, you know, hunky-dory. We're going to play as scheduled. I saw today that there was a sneaky little piece in there where I think it was Schefter that said that the owners have already begun discussions about a collective bargaining talks with the players in case of reduced revenue and not being able to play in front of fans or reduce fans. So we can all sit here and say, oh, the NFL is going to happen. It's no big deal. If we get to August and you're going to have 15 to 20,000 or no fans in NFL stadiums, don't think for a second that the owners aren't going to try to reach into the pockets of players and get money out. And again, all of that has to be collectively bargained, which could take time and which could delay everything.
Do we expect owners not to do that, though?
No, of course
that,
you do.
That shouldn't be the expectation. No. You know that's coming.
Yeah.
That's coming at every level of business in the world.
Exactly. And right so now. This is why it's just sports is going to come back at some point in some shape or form. I just think that the road is so bumpy.
Sports is sports.
And it's
business.
And it's complex in ways that I don't think that the average fan just says, well, why can't they just come back?
I think that second one there, that drop, I think that's what you're saying.
Sports is business.
Sports is not just sports.
Sports is sports. Sports now, is business.
And it's funny because we thought all along that the one that would have the hardest time coming back is college. I still think that that rings true. But the one thing that college sports has going for it, one, it seems like they're just willing to push through much like the NFL. But remember, college doesn't have a union. And I've seen a lot of people taking shots that athletic directors and coaches seemingly don't care. They can just be like, well, it's unpaid labor. Let's just bring them back. But they don't have a union to say no, right?
Yeah, but they have parents.
They have parents, but that's the one thing that college sports has going for it. Yes, theirs is more difficult because you got to deal with universities. You have to have kids on campuses. And we'll get to what the Pac-12 said about that. And you're seeing some schools take some positive steps about saying they're bringing kids back to campus in some shape or form. But that's the one challenge that college sports doesn't have, which may end up being a reason they do come back sooner than others, simply because they don't have to collectively bargain with the players, and every other sport does, and they got to come up with financials. Imagine if the NFL is cruising along, right? And you got training camps going on, and you're finally allowing teams back in and working out, and we get to like, oh, let's say the middle of August, and the season's a couple weeks away, and you find out that half the NFL teams can't play with fans, or they can play with 10,000 fans in a stadium. And the owners are staring at that being like, oh my God, that's a $5 or $6 billion loss. And they decide to go to the players and say, well, you're going to have to share in this. You're telling me that in the span of a week or two that the collective bargaining agreement is going to be completely redone and everything is going to be hunky dory. I don't buy that. So I just think there's rocky roads ahead for the NFL, just like there is for Major League Baseball, unless we get to August and they just say, hey, we can have 70,000 people in the stands and whatever, let's let this thing rip.
I wonder how much pressure they have to get going, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, society's ready for it. It's a hell of an opportunity if you can be the first out of the gate.
Sure.
And start playing here. People will eat it up. There's an opportunity there, but I wonder how much the players or owners feel that.
Well, hockey.
It's just, again, it's a game of chicken.
Hockey's the one right now that at least has a plan and a date, but it's a ways off. But at least they've got an agreement about what they're going to do and moving ahead.
It's funny because hockey threw out the fewest different proposals in this whole process, but yet they came together the best.
Yeah,
they stayed pretty quiet. I mean, the NBA was like, we could play here, we could do this, we could do this. The NHL was just like, we'll figure this out.
Don't you think some of those leagues leak things, though? The leagues leak things because they want to hear what the public thinks about them.
Major League Baseball has done that worse than anyone. Major League Baseball is riddled.
I think the NBA does it, too. Yeah. Either that or the NBA is just a leaky. There's just a lot of people that know chummy with media in the NBA.
Well, Lillard today with Chris Haynes, Lillard's was a direct shot trying to influence this, right? There was a purpose behind Lillard's statement.
Yeah, he said as much.
Yeah.
The other thing about baseball, last thing, and then we'll move on to what's going on in college football, is there is a movement to get them to ban trades this year or during this COVID stuff.
Yeah.
Because they don't want guys switching clubhouses.
Run that by me again.
Trades.
Yeah.
No trades because they don't want guys switching clubhouses.
Oh.
But
they're
already traveling.
Traveling, and they're in this.
Well, it's not that they've done it. That's just some one thing they're talking about.
no trades.
Like, should they just disallow trades?
That doesn't make any sense.
For the short season.
I feel like the optics of that are good, but it doesn't make any sense considering they're traveling to cities. And
Does any of this make any sense?
No, it's all mildly confusing.
How much of this makes sense? 5%.
Well, the NCAA punted on
these leagues really want their money.
Yes.
That's why this is trying to push forward despite not making sense.
The NCAA punted on the transfer waiver. Remember, this was going to be the year where you could transfer once without any sort of penalty, and they had to get rid of that because of the fear of just mass exodus. And that wasn't had anything to do with Corona. That was just like what if a California school isn't going to play? What would, or even just the threat of them not playing, what kind of carnage you could have there with players just being like, all right, well, I'm not playing here anymore.
Hey, since we mentioned the A's, it's worth noting we should do a segment on what this may mean for Major League Baseball to Portland. We'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah, can the Portland Diamond Project just start writing checks?
Well, the A's are struggling.
Yeah, the A's can't.
You know, this could rattle some cages, force some issues. So we'll get to that tomorrow. Up next, though, what Larry Scott said today about what could be coming in the Pac-12. Here's Mike.
Prime time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, I gotta tease something.
You gotta tease me something? What?
Tease.
Oh.
I'm gonna tease you. And I have a very small one. I'm gonna tease you, bro. New text code coming.
What?
Did you know that?
No, what's happening?
I will tell them tomorrow.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
I'm guessing this is gonna screw me.
Why?
This whole two-state thing.
It's a bad way to think.
Yeah, I gotta get over into Portland.
What? Why would what?
What?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
How does this have anything to do with his tease?
You said the tax thing.
No, I said text code.
Oh, text code. I thought you were talking about. I thought you said tax code.
Text code.
I was
text.
Oh, code. I was like, great. I'm getting screwed over again. Marty paying tax up the wazoo. Washington and Oregon, I got it coming both ways.
No, I didn't. I'll tell you that part, too.
Thought you were going to job me over
again. Do you want that news?
Hey, Entercom, you want to move to Vancouver so we don't have to pay income tax? Is that how that works?
I'm hearing that 10% of your paycheck, they're going to take 10% more.
Yeah.
Why not? And you need to pay me directly.
That's start writing you that check and a Nigerian prince.
That's what they said.
I tried getting Entercom to see if they'd let me. Why can't they bill me through Entercom Seattle? Why can't I just be an employee there? Thank you very much. They did not like that.
Save you a little dough, huh?
Yeah, save me about 9%.
All right. No, we have a new text code coming. Oh. So I want to get that in people's. I want to plant a seed there.
Yeah.
Tell you more about it tomorrow. You'll hear about it.
All right, that's not so bad. Then I thought the taxes, because someone on the text line said something about taxes, and so I was like, great, now we're talking taxes.
Hey, Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott was on the Paul Feinbaum show today. Paul Feinbaum of number 88 fame, I think.
Yeah,
he's one spot ahead of us. In the top 100.
If you don't know Paul, he's that shriveled peanut that talks SEC football.
While I am biased that I feel we should be higher on that list,
yeah.
I also feel Paul Feinbaum should be higher on that list. Isn't his show a big deal?
Paul Feinbaum's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really heard it, but I've heard it's, he's the guy that does the show in the South.
Yeah, I think he does it out of Alabama.
And he has a bunch of characters and stuff. And he's also on ESPN, and I don't like him as an analyst or anything.
He looks like that Raging Cajun. Is that James Corville?
James Carville.
Carville, yeah.
Yeah. But, he's got his own radio show, and it's been quite successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Larry Scott on. I guess he does a bunch of bits and characters and stuff. But anyway, Larry Scott said that he is not concerned that not all teams in his league would be able to play this fall.
Of course. No one's concerned about anything. Whenever you're dealing with commissioners or coaches, universities, no one will admit that there's anything wrong, except for the... Was it the Michigan University president that said that, and I don't remember if it was a guy or girl, but they said that they did not think that there would be football on campus at Michigan and that they would be surprised if football was anywhere. That's the first person I've seen.
When did they say that?
Just a couple days ago.
Michigan governor's female. I don't know her name.
It wasn't the governor. This was either the university president or the athletic director. I think it was the university president. They were the first one to come out and be like, I got to tell you, man, I don't see it.
Yeah. And then, apparently the Michigan president, his name is Mark Schlissel.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is these guys then get into they get on the Zoom calls with the other presidents.
Yeah.
And then they quickly change their tune.
Yeah.
Because they see the numbers. So I don't know, man. I just, you know, a month ago it was like, oh, what if Pac-12 started, but not all teams could play. Now Larry Scott's like, eh, not even worried about that.
Yeah, it was the University of Michigan president said no football if students aren't on campus, which is we've heard
that before.
But all that seems to be changing now because
exactly
schools are saying, well, it doesn't have to be all students. What if we just had some?
Let's put it this way. There are forces larger than old Mark Schlissel.
Yes.
Okay, and I know he's a powerful man as president of the University of Michigan, but at the same time, there is going to be a big movement
yep.
by some very
powerful
white hairs who with khaki pants
yep.
and glasses who want football to happen.
So in the Pac-12, Utah just announced, Colorado just announced, plans to have kids back in class. Oregon has done this. The Arizona schools have done this. So whether this actually occurs or not, or in what shape or fashion, there certainly seems to be a lot of movement after the Pac-12 seemed like they were getting left behind there. A lot of the Pac-12 schools are now like, oh, no, we're going to do this. And even the schools in California, are saying, well, we may not have kids on campus full time, but we're going to have some kids, and that's going to allow us to play sports. So I'm with you that even if classes aren't back on campus, the universities are going to fudge this thing, and they're going to offer like fly fishing, and there's going to be a social distancing class, and you sign up for that, and it's like, well,
they're technically
on campus, and we're gonna still go because the state schools of California, they said no. No kids in fall. And that was like San Diego State, San Jose State, Fresno State, which meant no sports. But we've already seen San Jose State, San Diego State, and I think there was one other that said, well, we're planning on a hybrid model, which will allow us to play football. So you're right in that even if this turns out where there isn't kids traditionally back on campus, I don't buy that these big schools, the Michigans and Ohio States and Alabamas and Oregons and USCs, aren't going to find a way to fudge this thing and make sure that you're allowing your athletes back on campus.
Sorry, Mr. Stissel.
Yeah.
I know what you think now, but that could change in the fall.
The only thing is that because kids are coming back, right? What, June 15th, right? Everyone can start working out.
Well, SEC opened their weight rooms June 8th.
Yeah. So we got kids coming back now. The only thing that would throw a huge monkey wrench in this is that if kids come back and then, you know, a bunch of kids get sick, and that could be a bit problematic. I saw one guy, I don't remember who it was. Was an athletic director of one of the big programs, might have been Bama. He actually made the claim of, hey, the kids coming back on campus, that's the best thing for them because it's a healthier environment. They're now already spinning that bringing them back in the team, in the weight rooms and all the structure there, that's actually going to be healthier for them than just sitting at home, which I'm not sure how you reason that, but that narrative is already being spun. And there's this one too, where there's talk that, you know, testing is going to be the big deal, that some teams, and by some, it seems like most, are going to be conducting the test themselves.
Hmm. That can't be fudged.
No, nor is it going to be, you know, I'm sure everything's going to be on.
Hey, you're fine, kid. Get back out there.
Yeah, and a lot of people are raising a huge red flag saying that this needs to be done by professionals and needs to be done, you know, the same across the board, not just giving it to team doctors and trainers and saying, okay, you're in charge of randomly testing kids.
Well, I wonder if all college football kids, players are going to come back for voluntary workouts.
They're coming back.
What about the parents? I mean, I know that Brett McMurphy was talking about this, where he was saying that a lot of parents have raised hell with some of these schools and coaches.
Yep.
And what percentage of them are going to let their kids come back? And what happens if, certainly most of them will probably be back, but what happens if a select few at Ohio State or key players' parents at Oregon or whatever don't allow their kids back? And, they're team is hurt because of it.
More so
than some other team.
It'll just be, you know, they're back here in a couple weeks across the country, and you just got to keep an eye on this because there'll be a 3 or 4 week ramp up period of working out, and then we get to camp, and we'll kind of see what happens. You know, if you see spikes in this, if you see kids, and what does happen? This is my ultimate question with any of the sports. What happens when people start testing positive? What do you do? We know what the Korean baseball or the Bundesliga, we know what they're doing, but if you get three kids at Oregon that test positive, what happens to the rest of them? Do you shut it down? Do those kids just go into isolation? What happens when an NBA player or an NFL player tests positive? That's the one thing right now that not only do we not know, but I haven't really seen any sort of definitive plan. And all the stuff we talk about with structure of coming back or payroll things, the one thing I haven't heard in any of these proposals is how you're going to handle a testing and how you're going to handle what happens when someone does inevitably test positive.
I saw this. The closest I saw to this was from the EPL in the English Premier League. They had a couple of cases when they tested every team. They had six cases total out of the 20 teams. And they said those six people, wasn't just players, it was staff or all included. Those six people had to be self-isolated for 7 days and everybody else could start training. So like they just singled them out and said, you have to isolate, but everyone else was fine. So maybe some leagues will see how that works and take guidance from that. Hmm. I thought that was a little bit strange considering we all thought 2 weeks and
well,
but
you don't know. You think they don't know yet? You know, I mean, I think what there's a lot of confidence in testing abilities that they don't have right now.
Yeah.
So they can't set all that in motion yet.
I honestly feel like, and I'm not trying to be cynical, I just think they have their head up their ass and they're just hoping that this goes away. I really do, because I get that it's hard to look into the future, but it baffles me that you're making all these plans and you don't have protocol like nailed down of this is how we're going to test. This is when we're going to test. This is who's going to do the testing. This is who's going to pay for the testing. This is what happens when someone tests positive. This is what happens when a coach tests positive. This is what happens when it's in a training staff. Anyone that knows, like when you're on a team and like the flu bug hits, how quickly it goes around a team.
Well,
they're better. And my point is, if there is not a definitive, this is how you handle it, A, B, C, D, there is not a handbook handed out and saying this is how you deal with it, you are going to get such sketchy responses from team to team, and you're just asking for nightmare scenarios about public backlash, shutting down, and all this other stuff if you don't have a definitive plan. What?
In fairness to them, though, Mike, it's a very fluid situation, and they have not made any definitive plans yet, right? We're only talking about voluntary workouts. So give them time to get all that set in place. They have to have that. They should have that. Not that it should be trusted 100%, but I think it's a little early to be slamming them for not having all of that lined up yet when this thing is moving so fast and that's different every day.
All I know is that should be the thing that you need to be you focused on. And I'm sorry, but if Alabama is put in charge of testing the Alabama football players, yeah.
We have a good text here. College football players will be tested by the schools. Public, this needs to be done by professional clinics. SEC, we are proud to announce a grand opening of Southeastern Labs.
100%.
That's fantastic.
Some rich dude somewhere opened up his own lab. Don't worry, I'll take care of everything. I got this.
I mean, the colleges might just get lucky because they're saying treatments might be ready by August, right?
Sure.
Not the vaccine, but the treatments. So they could be like, hey, we don't really need to have a plan because once the season starts for us, there'll be treatments. So if someone gets sick, well, they just get treated.
Well, the worst is you shut her down. I mean, you know.
But again,
you can always shut it down.
I don't get like if Cal has to shut it down, what does that do to the rest of the league? And this is why, like I said, I think you have to have at least serious discussions about having some hardline protocols.
No, but I'm saying like the college football, there are certainly risks to opening, but if you don't have all your ducks in a row and things go south, you're only back to square one by shutting down.
Sure.
Right.
And I guess my point is that if we've learned anything from our country's response versus other countries' response, having a definitive plan and protocols that everyone's following gets you through this thing a lot faster and a lot better than just kind of winging it and having 50 states do it 50 different ways and no seemingly cohesive plan. And so I would hope that whether, especially with colleges and you're dealing with universities and kids, that you would have this a little better figured out than, we'll let the teams test and figure out what they're doing.
All right, coming up next, sports deaths of note, 554 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up in the club, we have Karen Audio. But last segment here, we should mention three, not one, not two, but three notable sports deaths over the holiday weekend. Jerry Sloan died.
Yeah.
The Utah Jazz coach.
And he had been battling Alzheimer's for quite some time.
Yeah, he was 78, I think. Or was he older?
I do not know. I just know that he had been sick for a while.
And he was, of course, a great player as well as a great coach. Mm-hmm. And he had did you say Parkinson's?
I thought it was Alzheimer's.
He had Parkinson's.
Oh, Parkinson's?
Yeah.
I stand
And he
corrected.
Was 78 years old. And he was a gritty ass dude, man.
Yeah, he was gritty.
He was good.
He was like an old farmer guy. He used to like go to jazz practices, like wearing overalls, and he just was a gritty son of a gun.
Probably should be an NBA champ in terms of coaching.
Yeah.
With those Utah Jazz teams. Those teams were great.
Those teams were certainly some of the best to never win a title, and they just ran into Michael Jordan.
We have the loss of the great Eddie Sutton, legendary college basketball coach for Oklahoma State.
Yep.
He coached a lot of greats over the years, subtle greats like Bryant Reeves.
Big Country. Who else? Doug Gottlieb.
Gottlieb was there, yeah.
I don't remember a lot of Oklahoma State basketball players.
You probably wouldn't, but I do because Kansas played them every year.
Yeah, Big 12.
And I tell you, they had some guys like, do you remember Randy Rutherford?
I do remember Randy Rutherford.
God,
he was Oklahoma State?
He played at Oklahoma State. They got to the Final Four, I think, with him. The one time Eddie Sutton got to the Final Four, I think it was with him. Bryant Reeves got beat out by Tim Duncan and Wake Forest. Isn't that where Tim Duncan
was a Wake Forest guy.
Yeah. So Tim Duncan versus Bryant Reeves in the NCAA tournament, Oklahoma State. Cause I think Reeves, they might've been the number one seed, but Tim Duncan got him. And then Desmond Mason played there. There was a white guy by the name of Brooks Thompson
who was an
assassin, tough to play against. Eddie Sutton had great teams, man. He was a really good coach and, always seemed really drunk on the sideline. Probably because he was.
Just had that look about him.
But he certainly did. But he was well-respected. And then the third notable sports death is if you follow Pac-12 football for any modicum of time, you would remember the name Chris Dufresne.
Yeah.
He was a Pac-12 scribe for the LA Times. Well, college football, really. For the LA Times. He died yesterday, 62 years old.
Yeah, I was kind of reading through him. I guess just a great guy. There was all kinds of tributes coming out to him saying that he just was like one of the best dudes you'll ever meet in the business.
He was out of sports writing. He hadn't written at the LA Times at least since 2015. But they said that, and I remember him. We had him on the show a few times. Pac-12 Media Day, he was around. Seemed like a decent dude. But I guess he was eating dinner with his family and just suddenly passed away.
Yeah. Did they say what?
Well, they were awaiting results on a cancer test, but that was it. Like, that wouldn't, like, kill him suddenly.
No.
You know?
I mean, it's, you know, maybe aneurysm or heart attack or, you know, blood clot, who knows?
62, too young.
By the way, what I saw...
Gone too soon.
I thought that it was... When I saw this, I thought it was Alzheimer's. It said that Jerry Sloan had Lewy body dementia. I saw dementia and I thought, you know, it's when I see dementia, I think Alzheimer's. But I guess it's an umbrella term that encapsulates two similar dementias, both of which are characterized by deposits of protein in the brain. So I guess they say it's linked with Parkinson's, but the same thing that affects your muscles affects your brain. So, I guess he was battling that and the dementia, just it wasn't Alzheimer's. So he had it on he had it on both fronts.
Rest in peace, Chris Dufresne, Eddie Sutton,
Jerry Sloan.
Let's listen to Karen's get all pissed off.
Some of these things are getting like
cry.
They're kind of laughable, but at the same time, you just shake your head and you're like, God, maybe we deserve all this.
So that's next.
Just let the meteor hit us now.
It's 603 on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.